You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. Well, I got to be honest, man. It's one of those things where I'm still struggling, and I think the fan base in general is struggling because there's this weird feeling of, like, we're excited, but we're a little unsure and uneasy and also somewhat disappointed in certain aspects of the team, which is varying. And I'm planning on doing some stuff on Patreon, trying to get a gauge on things because, you know, you got some people that are high on Stokes, some people are low on Stokes, some people really like what King is doing, especially last week. Some people are furious. You know, Mason, Rashawn, the offensive line. But again, you know my buzzword for this year, which was not planned, it's just one of those things, but it's perspective, that and grit, I guess. And so I just want to go over this. And again, it's not that you don't know. It's just that I think you need to hear it. Because when I looked at it, I was kind of stunned. And I do want to go over some of the games that happened this past Sunday. Again, mostly for the sake of perspective. But it's pretty wild. So first of all, just so we're clear, the Green Bay Packers are 4-1. There's only one team that's better than 4-1 in the entire NFL, and that's the Cardinals are 5-0. That's it, which is really rare, by the way. I don't have any data to back that up, but I think you know. And if you want to fight me on it, then I guess I'm just going to have to go dig up some stats. I just didn't feel like it. But I just want to go through this because it's kind of crazy. So the Packers are 4-1, as you know. We've lost Jair. We lost Bakhtiari. We lost Elgton Jenkins. We lost our center, Josh Myers. We lost our speed threat at wide receiver, MVS. We lost Za'Darius Smith. We lost Chauncey Rivers, another edge rusher. Jair, I think I said already. I mean, it's pretty wild. And yet, despite all the adversity, the Packers are sitting at 4-1. They're right there with the Cardinals, right there with the Rams, right there with the Buccaneers are 4-1. But look at some of these other teams. The Cowboys also in the NFC are 4-1. The Seattle Seahawks right now are 2-3, as are the San Francisco 49ers. Think about that. It was not that long ago that everybody thought the 49ers were going to whoop on the Packers. Remember that? The 49ers are a powerhouse. They're back now that they're healthy. Kyle Shanahan's going to show the world all that nonsense. It's really going to happen. It's really going down. They're 2-3. The Seattle Seahawks, a team that I've been sort of for about 8 years now predicting their downfall, and it's just been the slowest collapse in history. They're 2-3, and it's not looking super great. The Minnesota Vikings, who I think most people considered probably the most likely team to actually compete with the Packers, although a lot of very, well, I'll be nice because some Packer fans weren't optimistic about the season either, but some people didn't necessarily think the Packers would do well this year. However, for the most part, the Vikings were supposed to be a top team. The Vikings, and they are a good team. I mean, historically and everything, they're 2-3 right now. Flip over to the AFC, not that it's super surprising, but it makes me feel happy saying it. The Patriots are 2-3, longtime powerhouse. The Kansas City Chiefs are not only 2-3, they're dead last in their own division. The Chargers are 4-1, the Broncos are 3-2, the Raiders are 3-2. The Chiefs are dead last. Talk about predictions. I told you last year this was coming. The Steelers, a team predicted to do well, I have no idea why, because they're not very good, but a lot of people didn't realize how bad the offense was. Thought that they'd be really solid this year, 2-3. Tennessee Titans in the AFC South, the only team with 3 wins. Nobody else has even 2. And you know, we're up against some teams that are, I don't want to say they're at full strength, but they haven't faced near the adversity we have. You know, who's the biggest name on IR for the Cardinals right now? I could read you the list, and I can tell you with absolute certainty that I'm not positive who any of these guys are. Justin Murray, Charles Washington, Josh Myles, Jordan Phillips, and Jack Crawford. I know the last two, Jordan Phillips and Jack Crawford. I know their names, but I don't really know who that is. And again, like I said, it's not so much that the Packers have the most injuries. It's that the how substantial the injuries are is crazy. The quality of the players that are injured. Jair, Rivers, MVS, Zadarius, Daphne also is on there. The Cowboys are without DeMarcus Lawrence, which is big, but I mean, that's, okay, so that's Zadarius. What else? Are they missing their number one corner? No. How about your premier left tackle? No. That's it. So whatever the issues, whatever it is that you might look at and say, I'm not quite happy with that, again, perspective. There's nothing written that says the Packers must be 5-0 right now. And again, just look at what happened this past week. The Seattle Seahawks fell to the division rival, only scoring 17 points. That sucks. I mean, and where do you go if you're Seattle? You know what I mean? What is your hope? Who's your future quarterback? They don't have one. They have Russell, and he's going to be there for a very long time, they hope, and he's not even getting it done. That would be like us having Aaron Rodgers, and everything else is falling apart around Aaron Rodgers, and you have no ability to draft. Oh, wait, we've been in that position before. It's not a good feeling. And maybe they should do what I've been saying they should have done the last 5 years now. Dump your GM and start over. But, you know, that's not my problem. The point is, the Seahawks franchise is in a downward spiral. The Packers are still a team that is capable of winning it all if they can stay healthy and hopefully get some of their guys back. I mean, the Minnesota Vikings barely beat the Detroit Lions. Barely. It's an embarrassment. And there's videos of them celebrating and you know, the quarterback and head coach basically getting into some kind of weird celebratory fist fight on the sideline over a 2-point game-winning field goal win over the Detroit Lions. What is their future? Where are they going in life? Where do they see themselves in 10 years? With a new team, new quarterback, new head coach, new everybody, I guess? I don't know. Denver Broncos are supposed to be some kind of a hot ticket. They just got beat by Pittsburgh. In fact, not only did they get beat by Pittsburgh, they allowed 27 points to one of the most pathetic offenses I've seen in forever. And Denver's claim to fame is their defense. That's an embarrassment. Carolina, another team that it's like, I don't understand why they're good, but somehow, I mean, Carolina and Denver, the same thing. Like, their record looks good, and they're doing things that are working, and I don't really understand it, but kudos. They got beat by Philadelphia. They scored 18 points in that game. Maybe it's because Christian McCaffrey's the only thing that works on that entire team. Cleveland Browns, another team where it's like, man, they got everything. Remember, do you remember when they played the Bears, and because everyone is a Justin Fields sycophant, we started talking about how it's not the Steelers, it's the Browns that are the greatest defense in football. You got to watch out for the Browns. The Browns defense allowed 47 points against the Chargers. They scored 42 points and lost. Think about that for a minute. What if that was the Packer game? Where would we be? Packer fans right now are mad because we allowed 22 points. The Cleveland Browns scored 42 points and lost. Where would we be right now? They have Myles Garrett on their team. They have a premier corner in Denzel Ward and drafted a first-round corner just like we did. So they basically have the same situation we have. They got a guy they really like. They got a first-round pick they really like. They got one of the best pass rushers in football. They got a whole bunch of stuff working on that defense. They gave up 47 points. Where would you be right now as a Packer fan? Complete, utter despair. We're done. We're doomed. Fire the defensive coordinator, et cetera, et cetera. But again, the funny thing is we can sit here and look at that and go, oh, that's crazy, but they'll bounce back. They'll be all right. I mean, they're probably not going to win a Super Bowl, but they might. Who knows? They're crazy, man. They can score a bunch of points. Defense can be good at times. They might. You never know. We need to start viewing the Packers like we view every other team. You know, the Raiders got a night. You know, the white hot Raiders just got embarrassed by the Chicago Bears. No, I don't necessarily expect a bounce back, but who cares? Same with the Bears win. Like, wow, congratulations. You got 20 whole points. Oh, wow. Way to go. Granted, most teams would have beat you, only scoring 20 points, the Chargers and Cleveland and Tennessee and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and Green Bay and Tampa Bay and Houston and New England and Washington and New Orleans and Atlanta and the Rams, the Dallas Cowboys and Buffalo all scored more than enough points to beat you in that game. But hey, the Raiders only got 9 and you won. Congratulations, and I'm very happy for you. Speaking of being a Raiders fan, with all that email stuff going around, how much does that suck? You get a glimpse of like, man, maybe we're a good team. Quarterback's playing well. Offense is doing stuff. Defense is looking electric. And then you put up 9 points against the Bears, and your head coach is about to get fired for, emails from 15 years ago. 49ers, again, just brutal. I mean, think about how bad this is. And again, it was just a matter of a couple weeks ago that the 49ers are going to be on top of the world, right? This electric offense is coming back. They just drafted their quarterback of the future. This defense is going to be one of the best in football. We've got the greatest head coach in NFL history. I mean, it's like Vince Lombardi, you know, John Madden and Kyle Shanahan or whatever. I don't know. I don't know where John Madden ranks, but he's an awesome dude, and I think he should be number two behind Vince because I like him, and I wish he was commentating again. And just a few short weeks later, where are we? They lost 17-10, and their starting quarterback, this great quarterback that they're all excited about that's going to usher them into a new era, a new future of greatness and wins and glory, he doesn't really even play very much. 15 of 29, we're talking 50% completion percentage for 192 yards, 6.6 average, no touchdowns and a pick, and he's hurt. And again, you played a division rival, the Arizona Cardinals, right, for dominance and supremacy in your division and in the NFC and in the NFL. We're going to show the world, we're going to prove to everybody, and their defense only allows 17 points to a very electric offense, and you still lose because your offense is that pathetic, because your genius, offensive-minded head coach couldn't quite put together a game plan to score more than 10 points. In fact, you were scoreless in the first half. It's the 49ers. Again, I understand this is a Packers podcast, but this is just about perspective. This is about understanding, getting us outside of our own little bubble, right? Because we're in our own little bubble, and we look at stuff, and we just say, man, it feels bad, you know? We won. We only scored 20, only allowed 22 points. We got to 25 despite the injuries and all the other issues, and we're 4-1. And again, Kansas City, I mean, how fast did they fall from the top team in football? The top quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen, and they rush right to the Super Bowl, they win a Super Bowl, and everyone was positive they'd go back-to-back. You start to see the cracks toward the end of the season. You start to see it a little bit in the playoffs. Then they get embarrassed in the Super Bowl and now have a losing record after just 5 weeks, getting absolutely annihilated by the Buffalo Bills, a team that you trampled on to get into the Super Bowl. The Packers are doing fine. They're not perfect, just like nobody is perfect. Everybody except the Cardinals has a loss. Everybody has a game that's cause for reflection, cause for pause. And even Arizona, you only scored 17 points. Supposedly dominant elite offense. Why did you only score 17 points? Well, it's just because, you know, their defense is so dominant. That's why. Really? Because the Seahawks scored 28 and the Packers scored 30 and the Lions scored 33. So run that back one more time for me. Explain to me again why you had only 17 points. Again, it at least gives you pause. Think about it from the perspective of if this was the Packers. It's going to inspire a little bit of fear in you, and that's fair, and all the fear and all that stuff is fair to have. I just want you to understand that everybody has to go through that because it's football, because it's a game that is filled with adversity and highs and lows and all that stuff. And the important part, like we've said 1,000 times already, is the grit factor, which means when the chips are down, you still find a way to come out and win. Like the Cardinals did. This was clearly not the best performance they've ever had. Clearly against this common opponent, the 49ers had some stuff up their sleeves. They knew how to contain the Cardinals. They knew how to essentially shut down one of the top offenses in all of football and prevent them from scoring more than 17 points. Arizona Cardinals, by the way, still after that performance, fourth highest scoring offense because they put up 38, 34, 31, and 37 against all these other teams. It makes you nervous, but at the same time, you know what? We did enough to win the game. That's what matters, and the Packers are finding a way. I don't know how we win next week or the week after or the week after. I don't know what injuries are coming, what horrible officiating crews are coming up. I don't know what kind of crazy twists and turns. I don't know which players are going to have good days or bad days. Maybe Rodgers has a bad day, and then we got to rely on somebody else. I don't know what's going to happen, but the point is, this is the kind of team that's been able to rise up. And maybe, just maybe, as we start to get some players back and we start to get into our groove and we start to get into more efficiency and things of that nature, this team does start to emerge as one of the top teams in football, which they already are. But I mean, you know, top two, not two territory, you know? And really, none of that matters. It really doesn't. I mean, it feels good, but at the end of the day, what does it really matter where they rank, right? The Chiefs were ranked guaranteed to win another Super Bowl. Who cares? Nobody cares. Didn't do them any good. Packers, very highly touted, definitely thought they were going to win, blah, 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 blah. They didn't, right? It doesn't matter. None of that matters. They're doing a great job, and they all deserve a lot of credit. Even the guys that aren't exactly doing perfect, whether it's Rashawn, King, Stokes, the offensive line, whoever, they're doing enough to show up when it matters, how it matters, getting the job done, and getting the wins, because that's what matters. It's not about winning pretty, it's about winning. Anyways, feels like a good enough spot to take a little break. If you wouldn't mind doing me a couple big favors. Number one, if you'd like to, you can support me directly on Patreon at patreon.com/pack_daddy. It's just a place where you can sign up on a month-to-month subscription. Obviously, there's no reason that you have to do that because the podcasts are free. It's just a way of saying this guy works real hard. He does this every single day. I want to just help him out. Here's $1 a month. And if you do that, again, I've been trying to do a little bit better as far as getting in there, doing polls, getting the questions and all that kind of stuff directly from Patreon so that the people that do support me get my support and get to participate in this show before everybody else. The most important thing, though, not to diminish my patrons, but the absolute most important thing you can do to help support this podcast is to spread the word, let everybody know. Things are going great right now for the podcast. Things are looking up. I just had a meeting, first time ever, kind of just started pounding my fist a little bit. Told the people I wanted to have a meeting, but with the people that own the network, and had a very good meeting with them about direction and growth and, more importantly, money. I would like more, please. But they've been very happy with the growth of the show. And I will say we're just about to the point where if we could just double where we're at, just double it, we're kind of home free, which is crazy to say because we got this far. If we can do it one more time, if we could just double the numbers, legitimately, not saying I would quit my job, but we're at that point where it financially could work. And that's an amazing thing, and that's a crazy thing. And really, again, all I need from you is to tell one person. Tell one person, hey, check out the Packernet podcast. Makes the entire world of difference in my life. If you happen to be a room full of 10 people, that works too. Cover up for some of the people that are choosing not to. That's fine. Anyways, just wanted to get that out there. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Before we get into PFF stuff, which I know is what a lot of you are here for, and we're gonna go through all that. That's why we took somewhat of an early break. I do want to go over a little bit of the notes from the press conferences and whatnot. Just kind of rip through that. There was also a message on Patreon. I want to go through that, and then we'll get into PFF. But starting off with head coach Matt LaFleur, this, by the way, is compliments of Mr. Tom Silverstein. I'm kind of just being lazy and letting him do the work for me. But he says, Packers head coach Matt LaFleur said cornerback Kevin King played really well and was basically playing with one arm for most of the game. Quote, it was unfortunate that happened, end quote. This is actually the second week in a row that he's highlighted somebody. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I don't know, but he's highlighted somebody, especially somebody that is not liked very much by the fan base. It was Kevin King and Billy Turner. But they did it on weeks when PFF actually agreed that they had played really well. Somebody had sent me that, hey, he said Billy Turner did really well, did he? And I was like, oh, I'm sure PFF's going to say he was terrible because they always do. And then it's going to be a big conflict. No, they said, no, he did a great job. Just highlighting that for the anti-PFF people. Their grading system doesn't seem to be all that different. I'm sure it's different, but not all that different. LaFleur said he loved the way that cornerback Eric Stokes challenged Bengals wide receiver Jamar Chase. I thought he competed at the highest level, he said. He said the back shoulder play Chase caught was an impressive play by the rookie receiver. Kind of echoed what I said more or less yesterday. He's right there on every single play. Almost every single pass that he gives up, he's right there. There was, maybe this is the back shoulder he was talking about. I'm not really sure, but there was one play where, again, I remember saying out loud, man, he was right there. There's not too much you can ask of that. But on top of that, almost instinctively, as he's going to make a tackle, he punches and actually punches the football.
I mean, it's just such a, it was like a 1-2, you know, one arm grabbing the other arm as it's like wrapping around to make a tackle. It just punches at the ball, and he did hit it. Jamar just secured it. So, again, it's one of those things where it's right there. It's like a coin flip, and it's just coming up tails a lot. Heads being good, tails being bad. But if it just goes the other way, you know, just if a couple of those things broke the other way, he had an unbelievable game. And he did have a fine game. Again, he probably could have had a pick if he just wasn't busting as fast as he possibly could to cover Jamar Chase because that ball was underthrown. That changes the dynamic of things, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm really not as worried. He might be a terrible football player for the rest of his life. I don't know. But it just feels different than King. King was one of those guys where it seems like everything's fine, no big deal, and then all of a sudden he gives up that big 60-yard pass play, and it's, he bites on a double move and just gets absolutely killed. I haven't seen that yet. It's going to happen. Every corner ever. Darrell Revis, I'm guaranteed at some point in his career he got beat on a double move real bad. It's going to happen. The point is, though, I haven't really seen a lot of that from Stokes yet. LaFleur said he didn't like a couple of the play calls in the red zone he made. Quote, we're best when we have the ability to get to a pass when we need be and have some of those plays where you have the best look possible and have it. Is this the sentence he said? Or what's happening right now? My brain is broken trying to read that. Bottom line, he wasn't happy with some of the play calls. Fine, done, got it. You go read it and you figure out if you can make sense of that. I have no idea what that sentence says. Second time in a row that I've heard him say this or something to this effect. And again, I've kind of said this, and I was talking to my buddy Blaine, who was here. He was kind of seeing the same things. A lot of people are kind of seeing this, which bodes very well for the defense overall. But here's what he says. LaFleur said he thought the play calls in the red zone were good on defense, but he said not every player carried out the correct assignment on some of the plays. We're seeing a lot of that. Everybody seems to be in a good spot. The one highlight, if you're not exactly sure what I'm talking about, if you have the ability to with Game Pass or whatever, just go on YouTube and try to find it. Look at the Packers game in the NFC Championship game against the 49ers. If you have the emotional strength to go watch that, go watch our defensive line and watch. I've never seen anything like that in my life. As watching football my entire life, I've never seen anything like that. As bad as that defensive line was at doing anything. There were basically five wide open gaps for a running back to run through at any given time on any given play in that game. With this, it seems like there's really only one place to go, and it's our defense dictating to the running back saying, there's your hole right there, go for it. And as he's running to it, we have a linebacker who is untouched running to that hole, and it's his job to make a tackle. And again, sometimes he doesn't. And when he doesn't, you're in a lot of trouble because everybody else is busy doing their job. You know, keeping that linebacker clean for one thing, ushering the running back to the linebacker is the other thing. If he doesn't make a play, you're kind of in a lot of trouble. So, I mean, that's just one example, but it is really solid because you have a defensive coordinator that's putting his players in a position to succeed. They just have to execute, and that's fantastic. LaFleur said he left the stadium yesterday wishing he had given the ball to running back A.J. Dillon more than 12 times. He said his receiving talent has been evident, and they feel confident in his skills in that aspect of the game. No kidding. No kidding. That guy's, it's, some of those passes were unnecessarily hard for him to catch, you know, where he's got to sky up and get it. But he doesn't, I shouldn't even say it because I'm worried it's a jinxy thing, but he doesn't drop anything. And, you know, it's another thing where he's got that Mercedes Lewis ability where you get him out in the flat away from defensive tackles and edge rushers where he's running up against maybe linebackers but mostly corners and safeties. You like that matchup a lot. So, and again, yeah, as far as his wanting more than 12 carries, again, he's a momentum guy. The more carries you give him, the better he gets. That's why he's a great fourth quarterback. Just ride him in the fourth quarter. Give him over and over and over again. He's just going to keep getting better. Oh, man. I just saw New York Times Sports talking about the emails that Gruden has sent out. Apparently going well beyond what we already know. Going on racist tirades against gay people, women, and concussion safety. It's one of those things where at the time, one off-color joke, you figure they'll probably just brush it off. But there is definitely a line here, and I haven't seen the emails, but yikes. You have to think we may have crossed that line. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, you got to see the context. Do you, though? Do you have to see the context? I mean, you should have to, but let's just be completely honest about this. In 2021, do you need to see the context? The answer is no. Nobody wants to see the context. They just need to know that it happened, and he's done. That's crazy. Yikes. Anyway, sorry, that just came across Twitter. I thought I'd read that. Good old non-breaking news. Anyways, I want to get to a message that I got from Brooke on Patreon just to kind of address some of these things. Here's what she had to say. Sorry, Brooke, if you didn't want this to be public, but it's somehow easier for me to do it this way than to type out a response. Plus, I mean, you know, it's content. She says, I liked that the podcast Monday was so positive, but I have to say I was a little surprised. I see all your points, so I'm glad you did, but I was just so stressed the entire game. Ditto for all of us, by the way. Our statistic for defense in the red zone, we have allowed all of our opponents who get into the red zone to score. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was the stat I saw during the game yesterday. Zero red zone stops. How can we say this defense is okay? The nerdy issue I'm going to have is the nebulous word okay, because, you know, again, we've got a range from good enough to perfect that okay could mean. And I think when I praise the defense, I'm leaning much more heavily toward the good enough category. Clearly there are issues. Red zone is it, and to your point, red zone is not just a aw shucks that wish that was a little bit better. That's a if we don't fix this, we're kind of doomed thing. But again, unlike some of the other areas, it doesn't carry with it the feeling that we can't do anything. For example, riddle me this. How does a team that always scores when they get in the red zone only score 22 points? In fact, nobody's scoring a lot of points against the Packers, despite the fact that everybody that gets into the red zone gets touchdowns. How does that happen? The answer is very few teams get into the red zone. That's the answer. That's the only answer that makes any sense. So again, eventually you're kind of, it's one of those things where you expect the dam to break, right? Very, very much like this game and a lot of other games where the defense is doing a great job. Let's say we get the ball, we go three and out, we give it to them, we stop them. We don't score again, we stop them. We don't score again, we stop them. That's three stops. At some point, you're looking at the saying, I'm happy for the defense, but if this offense doesn't do something, we're in trouble. Why? Because the dam's about to break. Eventually, this defense is going to start breaking down. They're going to start giving up more first downs, more yards, and eventually some scores, field goals, touchdowns, et cetera, et cetera. So similarly with this, if they don't fix this, it's going to become a problem. It doesn't take a genius to figure out the massive implications between 7 points and 3 points, or God forbid, get a takeaway in there at some point, or, you know, well, whatever, however many options you can come up with. And in critical games, the difference between 4 points and 3 points throughout the course of four quarters against some high-quality opponents is going to mean the difference between winning and losing. So 100% I'm with you. It's definitely not perfect. I think it's also, though, I think it is good enough. It is getting stops. It is doing a good job against the run, doing a good job against the pass, doing a good job with penalties, doing a good job with tackling, doing a good job with being, assignment sure, doing a good job of overcoming adversity with injuries, doing a good job with, you know, takeaways. There is one glaring issue in the red zone that does need to get fixed, but they're overcoming that. You also mentioned something to the effect of the Packers ranked 31st against the run. That's not correct. The defense is 18th, which isn't great, but it's not 31st, it's 18th. Also, one of the issues with these really high ranks and everything else is that week one really skewed everything, right? 13th ranked offense, but we scored 3 points week one. That's a big part of the reason why, right? 20th on defense. Yeah, we gave up 38 week one. So since we scored 3 points, we scored 35, 30, 27, 25, right? Since we gave up 38, we gave up 17, 28, 17, 22. Those are pretty solid. And same with rushing yards given up. We gave up 171 against the Saints. After that, 108, 67, 62, and 103. None of the other four are that horrible, right? Just barely over 100 is tolerable. It's the 171 that's glaring. And again, if we could just erase week one, which I know you can't, but if you could, we would rank quite high in a lot of categories instead of like in the middle. So, I mean, overall, the defense in terms of points is 20th. And again, a lot of that is because of 38 points against the Saints. They're actually ranked 6th in terms of yards, which is incredible. They're ranked 6th in turnovers with 8. 11th in first downs given up. 7th in net yards per attempt passing. 6th in interceptions. Again, 18th in rushing yards per attempt, 10th, top 10 in rushing touchdowns. So, I mean, and again, week one is really kind of skewing this quite a bit. They're doing a pretty good job. Turnover percentage, they're 7th. Scoring percentage, they're 14th, so better than average. So I get what you're saying, especially, and I agree. She goes on to say that, I want to believe we can make it all go away, make it all better. I was so confident, but I just don't feel it. I don't really feel it right now either, and I don't think too many Packer fans feel this is a Super Bowl team. What I personally feel is this is a team that has 90% of what they need. They have the component of grit, the ability to overcome adversity, the ability to win when the chips are down, use the tools that you have and make it work. They're going to have to build on that. Again, they're going to have to do better with red zone on offense and on defense. They're going to have to execute better across the board. The offense has to look closer to what they were in 2020 than what they do now. You know, Rodgers doesn't need to be MVP, but you would like to see him get a little bit better than he has been. Devontae's fine. He's doing great. The run game does need to improve. The offensive line does need to improve a little bit, especially in the run game. We would really like to be able to get something out of any other receiver, whether that be a wide receiver or a tight end, aside from just the onesie-twosies. Somebody's got to step up, whether it's Tonyan, Lazard, somebody. So, but these are things that, as we're plugging along and just finding really ugly ways to win, these are the things you can continue to build. And remember, it's just week 5. Do I think this team wins a Super Bowl if the playoffs were today? No, I don't. I don't think they're better than Buffalo. I don't think they're better than Arizona. I don't think they're better than Tampa. Those are probably the three teams that I don't know that we can beat right now. But I do think they have the components to do it. And I think if we get the guys back that we're missing, many of the guys back that we're missing, and continue to build, remember, a lot of the guys that we had last year, Aaron Rodgers was better in the second half of the year than the first half of the year. Devontae was better in the second half. Both of our safeties were better in the second half. Rashawn and Kenny were better in the second half. Entirely different team in the second half of the year than the first half. We don't know what the second half has in store. We don't know what Eric Stokes can be. We don't know what Kingsley Keke can be. He may be doing somewhat of a breakout. We'll have to see. We don't know what our safeties can be. Again, they had a real strong second half, not a super strong first half. We still haven't seen anybody emerge on the offense, and you have to assume that's going to happen. When we get Josh Myers and Elton Jenkins and David Bakhtiari back, you have to assume that's going to improve our run game. What does that do when Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon are running all over everybody? So I don't want to give you false hope, and I don't want to lie to you or blow smoke or anything. I just want to kind of give you a different viewpoint of things. It's probably not as bad as you think, but I completely understand. We're all in the same boat. We're very stressed, very worried, very concerned, and we all see a lot of different issues. But we're 4-1. We don't need to panic right now. We're doing just enough. We're doing everything that we need just to get the wins. And just understand that week 5 is not week 17. It's going to be a different team in week 17. Hopefully not worse. Hopefully not injured. But right now it's just a matter of build up on what you got, continue to improve, keep building those tools, stay healthy, and then we'll reevaluate as the season goes on. So that's sort of my thought on all that. All right, let's real quick rip through some of these PFF things, this, that, and the other thing, looking at what happened in this game from the vantage point of Pro Football Focus. I did put a little bit of this out there, not a ton. I know a lot of other people also were putting out some information about it, but we'll look at it. We'll see what they had to say, and we'll go about our business. In this game, we had one elite player, one guy, high 80s, 1, 2, 3, 4, we'll call it 5 in the 70s. So 7 total players that PFF said did a pretty good job. Depending on how broad we want to call average-ish, I would say roughly 3 people graded out poorly. Starting with that, Equanimeous was dead last. Probably not a huge surprise. His run blocking, receiving, et cetera, et cetera. Alan Lazard was actually 2nd from the bottom. Also partly, largely due to his run blocking, which was a little surprising, but it was also surprising to see him get blown up by corners making tackles on our wide receivers. It was definitely an off day. And then Lucas Patrick, we talked about that yesterday. He actually did very, very well as a pass blocker, but his run blocking was so bad. He had a 50.6 overall grade. He had an 85.2 pass blocking, which is phenomenal. Highest pass blocking grade of anybody along the offensive line, but a 39.3 run block. And from my perspective, I'll probably just take him off the list because I'm fine with that. So really just 2 guys that were kind of troubling as far as their grades. Guys that graded out well, Randall Cobb with basically a 70 overall grade. Royce Newman, which is great to see because he was great in preseason and then just kind of fell off and hasn't really been doing anything. But 61 pass blocking, which isn't the greatest in the world, but I'll take it. 70 run blocking, second highest run blocking grade behind only Robert Tonyan, which how often did he even do that? 12 times? I guess we'll say second. Next highest grade was Aaron Jones, 70 overall grade, 73 pass blocking, 75 rushing grade, 56 receiving grade. I'm not entirely sure why, but who cares? A.J. Dillon was the fourth highest graded guy, 72.2 overall grade. He had a 90 receiving grade. So I'm not going to do it today, but one of the things to check on is how the Packers are ranking across the NFL. I'm curious where he ranks as far as running backs, as far as their receiving grade goes. Pass blocking, 73 overall, and then his running grade was a 64, which I guess kind of makes sense. He just kind of took what was given to him, which was almost nothing. Third highest was Aaron Rodgers. You love to see it. His grades have been kind of stagnant this year. He's definitely not, I mean, he's not even in the top 10, so it's nice to see that. Number two, absolutely love to see it, Mercedes Lewis, 87 overall grade, 91.5 receiving grade. I got to look real quick. When was the last time he had that ever? I got to know. I got to know. So 2020, he did have a 90.9, so that was actually pretty close. His second highest was a 70, so there's that. Let's see, he did have a 90. So he has like one of those a year. In 2019, he had a 91.6 against Detroit. So, all right, I guess he has one of those a year. So there you go. This was his one, 91.5 overall grade. And then a 75 pass blocking, because that's what he does, 60 run blocking. Number one, not surprising to anybody, Mr. Davante Adams, 93.0 overall. Every single year for the last 3 to 4 years, I say he probably topped out. 2018, he had a 87.8 overall grade, and I said now is about the time when he starts to level off, right? He's been skyrocketing, 59, 72, 80, 87.8. He's not going to continue to go up. He goes from an 87.8 to an 88. All right, well, he's kind of leveling off now. He's going to start dipping down a little bit. You know, if he gets like an 85, that's solid. Nope, 92 overall in 2020. Okay, well, he's 100% maxed out now. He's not going any higher. He can't be any better. It's impossible. One of the greatest of all time at this point. He has to start coming down. Has to come down. There's nowhere to go. There's no way to go higher than this. You know, when you average it out over a year, no way. 92 was last year. He's at a 92.4 right now. He's just, I don't get it. I don't get it, but he's doing it. And that's with his week one being a 67.8 overall grade. So he's making up for lost time. Davante is, I mean, legitimately, at some point, we got to start talking about him in company with some of the greatest of all time. I mean, just how good he's been. The stats are there, the game to game, but also just when was the last time he was a bad receiver? He's been solid. It's not like some of these guys were like, oh, he had a down year, whatever. No, he started off slow. But once he became a good receiver, he didn't turn around, and he just gets better every year. I mean, let me just pull up, like, Julio, just for comparison, right? I mean, nobody's going to look at Julio and say that the guy is just... So So 2011, he was kind of... You know, he's never bad, but 2011, he was, like, in the 70s. That was, like, year three for Davante in the 70s. And his second year, though, is when he took off. 86, 80, 89, 92, 93, 91, 90, 90, 86. So he had 9 years. So Devontae's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 6, 7, 8, 9. So can he do 4 more years? I don't know if he can do 4 more years. But I just still incredible. And again, the grades are Julio-esque. You know, 87, 88, 92. So let's say from an 85 plus 4 years in a row with two of those being in the 90s. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I guess Julio had, starting in 2014, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row. And so far, 2021, he's at a 71. So it's coming down. New team, that whole thing. But I just, okay, so maybe not Julio level. But man. And even if you talk about some of the stats, too, I mean, if you're talking touchdowns, Julio's got nothing on Davante in terms of touchdowns. Julio Jones has never had 10 touchdowns in a season. Davante had 20 last year. He also had 13 in 2018, 10 in 2017, 14 in 2016. It's crazy. And again, talking about perspective, and I understand, like, we're all nervous. Like, I'm glad Devontae's good, but we need a Super Bowl because I'm freaking out. Try as hard as you can to appreciate what you got, because it's going to be gone sooner than later. whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Devontae, both, Bakhtiari, Kenny, all, whatever it is, look at what we have. Bakhtiari, Elgton Jenkins, Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers. Even the novelty guys like A.J. Dillon, Mercedes Lewis, Alan Lazard, you know, we're going to be talking about, dude, remember how good Lazard was as a blocker? How crazy that was? Remember Mercedes Lewis? Like, he'd catch one pass a game and he'd bowl over 11 defenders? Kenny Clark, Zadarius, Preston, Rashawn, Jair, Savage, Amos. This is a historically good Packers team. And I'm not just saying, I've done this podcast for a while. I promise you, I was not saying this in 2018. This is going back to 2011, even. As good as that offense was, this is different. On some level, there's got to be some appreciation. And yeah, for that exact reason, please win a Super Bowl. I get that. But it's just I know it's going to sting to be in the future and look back and go, man, I would just give anything. I'd give anything to go back to 2021. Do you remember how good that team was? We're going to be on our lads just looking at that roster from 2020 and 2021, salivating, going, I would give anything, anything to go back there. Anyways, looking at the blocking, again, kind of went through some of the grades, but let's just do this. We'll go by left tackle and work our way around. Yosh Nijman, 63 run blocking, 76 pass blocking. I'll take it. He gave up two pressures. Unfortunately, both of them were sacks, but, you know, whatever. Left guard, John Runyon, run blocking was a 53, pass blocking was basically an 80, 79.3. Again, I think I'm okay with that. The run blocking does need to be a lot better because that is a major component of what a football team does. But one hit, two hurries, three total pressures. Center was Lucas Patrick. Again, horrific run blocking, but the best pass blocker on the team, gave up exactly zero pressures on the day. Right guard was Royce Newman, 70 run blocking, 61 pass blocking, gave up two pressures, which was a hit in a hurry. Right tackle, Billy Turner, 52 run blocking, 64 pass blocking, gave up two hurries, and that was it. We'll skip over to the defense now. This was a little bit less as far as the good players and a little bit higher in terms of bad players. Again, kind of hard to draw a hard cutoff. If we get down to like 53, you had Oren Burks, 51 overall grade was Yadam. The definitively bad players, 44 overall grade for Ladarius Hamilton, which, I mean, cut the guy some slack. I didn't even know he was on the team, so it's just, you know, better luck next week, bud. He did get two pressures, though. I'll take that. Two pressures on 11 attempts. Take that all day. TJ Slayton, surprisingly, 39.8 overall grade, largely because his run defense, I don't understand it, 36.4 overall grade. He has to be better than that. Darnell Savage with a 37.9. Again, I'm 100% going to cut him some slack. I know that was because of that big play. I mean, when your passer rating is a 156.3 when targeted, you give up technically 83 yards and a touchdown, three receptions on four targets. I get it, but, you know, he needs to be a little bit better, but a 39, give me a 37, give me a break. And then dead last was Tyler Lancaster. Defensive line's been having some issues. We're starting to see glimmers of hope. Tyler had a good week last week, terrible this week. And again, you know, bigger guy, run defense was his biggest issue, and that's not really super acceptable. Guys that graded out pretty well, Jonathan Garvin with a 70 overall grade, Rashawn Gary, 71, Kevin King with a 76. Can't remember the last time he was on top like that. Devondre Campbell with a 79 overall grade, and Kenny Clark was number one with an 80.3 overall grade. Kenny Clark continues to dominate. I mean, certainly not perfect, but he's staying on top, and I like that. Pass rush wasn't quite as good. He only had one pressure on 35 attempts, which is not exactly what you want. In fact, let's run through that. Dean Lowry led the team on pressures, four on 26, including a sack and three hurries. Garvin had three on eight attempts, which is the most absurd thing I've heard in a while. That's a really high number. A hit and two hurries. Ladarius Hamilton with two. Kingsley Kiki had two on 24 attempts. Preston had two on 25 attempts. TJ Slayton, one on nine. Oren, one on just two attempts. Rashawn, one on 30 attempts. That's way too low. Chris Barnes, one on one attempt. So way to go, Chris. And Kenny Clark, one on 35, as I said. Looking at the individualized grades, run defense, and this is where we kind of had a lot of guys struggling. Ladarius Hamilton, Eric Stokes, TJ Slayton, Tyler Lancaster, Chandon Sullivan, all horrific grades. guys that graded out quite well, starting at, let's say, 68-ish. Chris Barnes, 68. Darnell Savage, 68. Kingsley, 68. Amos, 69. Preston, 76. Kenny, 76. Devondre Campbell, 76. Rashawn Gary, 79.9, led the team. Tackling, everybody was pretty solid with the exception of three guys, Eric Stokes, Kenny Clark, and Dean Lowry. Got to clean that up. Pass rush, again, kind of already went over that as far as grades. Nobody was bad. Nobody was really great. Garvin, Lowry, and Barnes were in the 70s. Coverage, the guys with bad grades, we'll say in the 40s or lower, Preston, Yottam, and Savage. Preston needs to just stop covering guys. Good grades, Chandon Sullivan with a 73.2. You love to see that. Devondre Campbell with a 74, because obviously, and Kevin King with a 76.5, highest coverage grade. Way to go, Kev. Love it. Got to get him on the show. Statistics, Stokes, 8 targets, 5 receptions, 84 yards, and a pass breakup. Again, I don't hate that. I'd like it to be a little bit lower than 84 yards. That's a little bit high, but I mean, I don't know. Amos, 6 targets, 4 receptions, 24 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Chris Barnes, 4 targets, 3 receptions, 20 yards, and nothing. Darnell Savage, I already went over. Chandon Sullivan, 3 targets, 2 receptions, only 11 yards. Kevin King, 3 targets, 3 receptions, 17 yards. Devondre Campbell, 3 targets, 3 receptions, 22 yards, and a pick. Yottam, 2 targets, 1 reception, 8 yards. Oren, 1 for 1 for 5 yards. And Preston, 1 for 1 for 7 yards. Finally, special teams, and to be honest, we don't really need to go over the kickers. Mason graded out terribly. Bajorquez was graded out basically as average, but it wasn't great. He only had 2 punts. As far as the players on special teams, again, it's really frustrating. 0 players had a grade of 70, and I've just for the sake of looking at it, because I'm like, well, does anybody ever get it? A lot of teams have many guys in like 70s, 80s, whatever, that do a really good job. Highest graded guy was Malik Taylor with a 69.6. On the other side, Oren Burks, Yottam, and Henry Black rated out pretty terribly. So it's just kind of across the board, man. Everybody's Mason, you know, with a 26.9 grade. It's special teams is it's got to get better. I don't know what else to say about it. But kicking is bad, coverage is bad, returning is bad. Again, Amari didn't really do anything. 2 returns, 9 yards for punts, 1 return for 16 on kickoffs. It's just not good enough. But again, we got time. We'll get it figured out. You folks have yourselves a fantastic day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have yourselves a good one. Goodbye.